So I thought tonight I would take you all to Vrindavan. How many here have been to Vrindavan? Wow. How many would like to go to Vrindavan? Okay. One of the ways to go to Vrindavan that most people try is you buy a ticket. But Prabhupada said you can't enter Vrindavan just by buying a ticket. You can enter Vrindavan. You can go into the geographic territory called Vrindavan, but you can't enter Vrindavan just by buying a ticket. Because Vrindavan is Krishna's home. It's Krishna's holy land. So if you just buy a ticket, you can go what Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes. It's like oil on top of water. Oil doesn't mix with water. There's a thin veneer. You put some oil on water and it spreads out, and you don't see the water, you see the oil on the surface of the water. Beneath the oil is the water. Similarly, by just buying a ticket, you can only find what's the covering or the superficial exterior portion of Vrindavan. I was just in Vrindavan about a month ago, and we're going down the road that leads to Vrindavan. It looked like Disneyland. I mean, there's all this development and billboards and stuff, and I thought, oh my goodness, what happened to Vrindavan? You got covered by this oil film instead of the pure. So how you enter into the pure realm of Vrindavan is through a sound vibration. So just as the kirtan, or the chanting of Krishna's holy name, as we were doing and you were doing before I got here, that chanting is no different than Krishna, but also the descriptions of Krishna, like it's found in Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'm going to speak a little bit about Krishna in Vrindavan, and by that sound vibration, we can enter. If we're hearing with great attention, and the part of Srimad Bhagavatam that I'm going to speak about or speak from resonates with a topic that I've been speaking about as I've been visiting some colleges in the Midwest, and the other evening at MIT, the topic of compassion. And one of the pastimes where Krishna shows compassion to his devotees is when he was just 7 years old. Of course, by nature, Krishna is loving and very compassionate, but when he was 7 years old, he rescued the whole of Vrindavan from a torrential water of devastation flood sent by Indra by lifting up the hill of Govardhan. Those of you that have been to Vrindavan, you know the hill of Govardhan is not like, you know, a little boulder or something. It's a mountain that takes, if you walk fast, it takes 6 to 7 hours to walk around. It's very long, shaped like a peacock. At least if you look at it from an aerial projection, there's the head of the peacock with two eyes, Radhakund Shyamakund. At the bottom there's the tail, just like a peacock sitting on a branch with his tail feathers sticking out. That's the lower end of Govardhan Hill. And in between the belly portion of the peacock, that's where Manasi Ganga is, where wonderful pastimes of Krishna perform throughout the whole of Govardhan. And just when he was 7 years old, Krishna lifted the Govardhan Hill. He lifted not just with both hands, he lifted with one hand. And he lifted not just with his right hand, but with his left hand. And he lifted with the little finger of his left hand. He was really showing off. Indicating it's not like an ordinary, like, something. It's mystical. Krishna was exhibiting his divinity, his mystic power as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the residents of Vrindavan are so loving, they didn't even think about, wow, he must be something special. They were thinking, Krishna's arm must be getting tired. Can we massage his arm? Maybe you can at least shift to the other arm, Krishna, because one arm must be getting tired, and we'll help hold up the mountain with our sticks for herding the cows. Actually, Krishna thinks he's lifting up the hill, but we're really holding up the hill. Because their hearts were just filled with love and devotion for Krishna. Going back, that was an afternoon pastime. It started in a particular afternoon, went for 7 days. And that morning, what was the pastime that Krishna performed? He satisfied the desire of the wives of the brahmanas to serve Krishna in a very direct, personal, and intimate way. Now, those of you that are parents, I don't see any small children here, but parents that have some small children, you send your kids to school. Commonly, parents do this. They send their kids with a little lunchbox or lunch pail or whatever it is, some little thing, container. So imagine if you had Krishna as your son, how opulent would be the lunch that you would send with Krishna. And all the cowherd boys, they had lots of prasadam. It was like a regular program where they would stop and have lunch. And big lunch. Such a big lunch that little boys would have to rest after lunch. It was such a big lunch. But in that particular morning, even before it was lunchtime, the boys were complaining, Krishna, we're hungry. Help us. Do something. Krishna was inducing them to feel hunger like that. So he smiled and said, just down the way, down the side of Govardhan Hill, there's a big yajna, big sacrifice, big festival. And many, many brahmanas, they've gathered so many, many things. You go and speak my name and Balaram's name and say, Balaram and Krishna are hungry, can you give something? Little boys. You know, charitable brahmanas. Surely they would give something. But you know what they said when the cowherd boys spoke on Krishna's behalf? They didn't say anything. They didn't even acknowledge their presence. They were rude. We're busy in our yajna. We're doing important work. Get away, little boys. Come back when we're done. They didn't even say that. They just didn't even speak to them. The boys came back and told Krishna, we're very sorry to report. They didn't even acknowledge our existence. It wasn't a nice experience at all. What do we do? Krishna smiled and said, that's okay. Go to the homes of the brahmanas and ask their wives. Go ask the wives of the brahmanas. Invoke my name. Say, Krishna and Balaram sent me. And they would like something to eat. Immediately, the wives of the brahmanas dropped everything, prepared wonderful, sumptuous prasadam, and dressed in fine garments, and came smiling and brought everything so happily, immediately, to please Krishna. And when Krishna spoke to them, he said, in Sanskrit, the translation of the words of the verse are the same thing that Krishna said to the gopis. Same thing. You have pleased me very much by your nice offering, but there are religious principles to be observed. You should go back to your home to be satisfied that you've done some nice service. They didn't want to hear that. They wanted to be with Krishna and serve Krishna. So when the wives went back to their homes, the husbands saw that their wives were effulgent, radiant, beautiful like they had never seen them before. They asked them, what happened? We just gave some food to Krishna. He said, oh, Krishna gave us that opportunity, but we were so proud of our learning and our rituals and our little program that we forgot what the purpose of all of that is. It's to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we're so fortunate that we have qualified wives like you. Now, just by your association, we can become elevated in spiritual life. So that was when Krishna was just 7. And at that same age, there's another pastime that also shows Krishna's compassion. He showed compassion to all the residents of Vrindavan by lifting Govardhan Hill and protecting them from the rain. Not just rain, but it was flooding. And he showed his compassion to the wives of the brahmanas and his compassion to the brahmanas by delivering them through their wives. But just before that, Krishna was, the description is chapter 22 from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Krishna was in the forest with the cowherd boys, far from the village of Vrindavan, deep into the forest. And it was in the middle of the summer. And those of you that have been in Vrindavan or in Delhi or UP in the summer, how hot does it get? Kids sometimes go there because that's the only time they can go, is during the summer vacation. And I asked them, how did it go? They said, Maharaj, it's like walking in an oven. So hot. And even at night, you can't get away from the heat. It's just like even in hot at night, you're just perspiring and you don't even want to wait for the day. It's too hot. There's no escape. Maharaj, it was nice being in Vrindavan, but it was too hot. So it was very hot. When Krishna was herding the cows with the cowherd boys. But he was noticing that there were so many trees in the forest of Vrindavan that it was tolerable. And he was appreciating. I'm going to read a few verses. Krishna is appreciating the trees of Vrindavan. When the sun's heat became intense, Lord Krishna saw that the trees were acting as umbrellas by shading him, and thus he spoke with his boyfriends. Lord Krishna said, O Stoka Krishna and Amshu, O Sri Dham, Subal and Arjun, O Brishaba, O Jasvi, Devaprastha and Varatapa, just see these greatly fortunate trees whose lives are completely dedicated to the benefit of others, even while tolerating the wind, rain, heat, and snow. I don't know of any snow in Vrindavan. If it came, they would tolerate the snow too. They protect us from these elements. Just see how these trees are maintaining every living entity. Their birth is successful. Their behavior is just like that of great personalities, for anyone who asks anything from a tree never goes away disappointed. The trees fulfill one's desires with their leaves, flowers, fruits, their shade, roots, bark, and wood. And also their fragrance, sap, ashes, pulp, and shoots. In other words, whatever they have. They just serve. It is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. So that's the key verse that I wanted to speak about. In the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, is there anybody here that's new? Like, really new? Okay. few hands, okay. I've been around for a while. The first temple that I lived in, like 40 years ago, was this temple. Not, it was in Boston. It was in Alston at the time. So I'm not so new. But when I was new, I heard about Lord Chaitanya. So I'm going to share something with you about Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is the form of the Lord who taught this public chanting or congregational chanting like we've been doing that was done in the public. Because in India, in temples, there's worship where there's mantras that are chanted, and it's done by the brahmanas that know the sacred mantras, and on behalf of the public they chant the mantras, but the public doesn't get an opportunity to be exposed to that so much. So Lord Chaitanya took that practice, the congregational or together, chanting together activity, and it reached such a joyful, enthusiastic, exuberant pitch, fever, that they just went outdoors and went all over the village, the town, and chanted loudly the holy names of the Lord. And it was contagious. People heard the chanting and it was so joyful they joined the chanting and time the whole of the place where Lord Chaitanya lived, Navadvip, was filled with the sound of the chanting of the holy name. And then Lord Chaitanya traveled throughout all of India and filled all of India with the chanting of the holy name. It was so ecstatic that his associate, Lord Nityananda, said, one day this chanting will be heard in every town and village all over the world. Even Boston. And Caracas, Venezuela, and Moscow, and you name it. Every town and village. So Lord Chaitanya is the one that inaugurated that Nama Sankirtan, or the Yuga Dharma, the means for this age that's most effective for awakening our dormant spiritual consciousness. And he taught, he gave some teachings, 8 teachings in number that he wrote, on how to perfect, to get the full fruit of chanting God's holy name. That full fruit is love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's one of those 8 verses that's a very important one. Especially nice. It's so important, Lord Chaitanya said, it's so important that everyone who is my devotee should wear this verse strung around their neck on the thread of the holy name. So when chanting the holy name, just like here's a garland, you can't see the thread because it's in between the flower petals. But you can see the flowers held together by the thread, and this garland, this nice verse, is like a garland. Lord Chaitanya said it should be worn around the neck at all times. So there's 4 parts to it. I'll say it in Sanskrit and then explain. Trinadapi sunichena taror ivasahishnana amanina amanidena kirtaniya sadahari. So the 4 parts are to chant in a pure way. One should maintain a very humble heart. More humble and tolerant than a piece of straw in the street. Piece of straw in the street, even grass. If you step on grass, it bows down. But then, after some time, whoop, it's back up again. But straw stays down. So, a devotee in heart should be very humble, like straw. More humble than a piece of straw. More tolerant than a tree. Just like Krishna is appreciating, the trees tolerate the scorching elements. But what do? They just serve. It's the heat of the summer. Oh, very good. Here's some shade. You can be cool. It's the cold of the summer. Here, you can take a branch. Just break it off, please, and use it for fuel. Some birds are hungry, so here's some fruits, or here's some flowers. Even, you know, insects crawling, some of the birds are pecking away at the tree, grabbing some insects. Whatever the condition is, the tree is just serving others and is tolerating all other circumstances just to continue to serve others. So a devotee, the chanter of the holy name, Lord Chaitanya recommended, should adopt this spirit. Just serve others in all circumstances. Constitutionally, that's who we are. We're servants of God. So render that service in all circumstances, tolerating the external dualities of life. Offer all respect unto others. Manina. And this is even the most difficult one. Without expectation of respect in return. Because generally when people offer respect to others, they're polite, they say some kind words, they're expecting something. Like, you know, you be kind back. I've heard this from so many people. My relative, I'm trying to do something. You know, mother-in-laws and all that kind of thing. You know, to the characteristic. But I can never please them no matter what I do. So, I'm offering respect to others, but I'm expecting something in return. So when there's no false ego, you're not expecting anything in return. You're just offering respect, and you're offering service, and you're tolerating dualities, and maintaining a humble mood. In such a state of mind, Lord Chaitanya said, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. One can then get a taste for the spiritual reality that's beneath all this covering of stuff, the material covering, all resting upon the most subtle of the material elements, according to the Vedic wisdom, is false ego. Put a nice little layer of false ego and put everything else on it, and it's permeated with false ego, whatever it is. Even acts of kindness are permeated by what's in it. You know, I get some happiness from this, and therefore I do it. But the position of a devotee of the Lord is they don't take that into consideration. Whatever it is, let me just continue to serve the Supreme, serve Krishna, and serve the part and parcel living entities who are from Krishna, that's all of us, and all the trees and birds and fish and aquatics and plants and animals and all forms of life, because they're also spirit souls. So, this is Lord Chaitanya's teaching. Now Krishna is saying that the trees, they've achieved perfection. We generally don't hear trees glorified like that. Wow. Perfection of life, become a tree. But it's not like just become a tree, but have that mood. And there are four things that Krishna says that everyone, not trees only, but all of us should offer life, wealth, intelligence, and words for the benefit of others. When, now this is a specific verse from Srimad Bhagavatam that I didn't read until many years after I had become a devotee, but I heard Prabhupada explain it. And in a different context, and I'm going to share that context with you. He was describing, it was instructions for his followers, and he was saying that when we interact with the public, his followers interact with the public, we can measure how effective we are in doing that by these four things. One, when we offer the opportunity for devotional service to others, they become so moved they give their life. to the process of devotional service, serving Krishna. They may not give their life, but they can give their intelligence by reading Krishna's words or assisting in some practical service. If they can't do that, they can give some wealth, something of the fruit of their hard-earned work that helps the activities of devotion to Krishna. At least, Prabhupada explained, they should appreciate with their words. And then he said something like, the Hare Krishna people are nice. We should, when we interact with other people, and particularly this is for devotees, but many of you are, some of you are very new, and but many of you have been practicing devotional service for some time, and you're not living in the temple wearing, you know, saffron cloth or something, but you're working in the world, and other people come to know you. I was just having a discussion with somebody in the room who's, I won't embarrass, but at work they know. He's a Hare Krishna guy. And when whatever he does reflects on the whole Hare Krishna movement, good or bad, or the other way around, bad or good. People judge the whole Hare Krishna movement based on his qualities. So if he's, you know, good, the Hare Krishna people are good. It can work the other way around. I'll share one experience that's the other way around. Recently I was at Penn State University, and the person there that operates or organizes the club, is like the facilitator of a Vedic vision club on Penn State campus. He recently invited, some of you know this name, Badahari, a kirtan singer. Really, such a nice, wonderful, pure-hearted, melt-your-heart singer. So he invited him to come and make a presentation on campus. And somebody else, another coordinator of Syria, a group of yoga clubs, saw the poster, and so she contacted our club organizer and said, this person, Badahari, if he's coming to campus and you're organizing this, is it possible you could arrange for him to also perform at our yoga groups? We have a gathering once a week on such and such day. And he said, well, I have to check with him, but I'm sure he would be really happy if it fits in his schedule. And then she asked another question. And she said, I hope you don't mind my asking, but is this Vedic Vision Club connected with the Hare Krishna group? And he grabbed his head saying, oh boy, I can see it coming now. She's going to tell me she had a bad experience. And she probably did, and, you know, okay, so yeah, you know, yes, it's with the Hare Krishna club, in fact, the Hare Krishna group, in fact, I'm a Hare Krishna guy. I'm a member of the Hare Krishna movement. And she said, well, let me tell you, I had a bad experience, blah, 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 blah. So he heard the whole thing, and she vented for a while, and then she said, but you're not like that. And then he, you know, had to be the apologist and say, well, you know, our movement isn't like that, but, you know, if somebody misbehaves or does something that's not respecting or representing properly the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, try to appreciate they're trying to purify themselves, and it's not what our teachings are. He said, yeah, I can see from your qualities it's not like that at all. And then she said, you know, as long as you're a member of that Hare Krishna group, let me ask you a question about this and a question about that and a question about the other thing. And before you knew, she wanted a Bhagavad Gita. Now, it started with bad, Hare Krishnas are bad. Without, you know, because she had a bad experience. But having a whole series of experiences that were good, her whole mood changed. So, the point I'm making is, you It's not just, he's not a temple living devotee. He's, he's in a PhD program at Penn State University. But he's representing, the organization because people know that he's a Hare Krishna guy. Just like some of you are working in your offices or whatever it is that you do in your life, as you even just go into the social circle that you move in, you're representing the organization and the teachings of our spiritual master. And so it's behooved you to represent nicely as best you can. And in that way, that alone is a service. Where at the end of the day or the end of someone's encounter with you, they come to know that you're a devotee and they say, wow, these Hare Krishna people are nice. Or just go up the ladder. They can offer their intelligence by reading the wisdom. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, those who study the sacred conversation are worshipping me with their intelligence. Krishna says, so give your intelligence to Krishna. And then some practical activity that you know how to do, whatever that is. You do that for Krishna. Work for Krishna. Do something for Krishna. Make an offering to Krishna like that. Or some of the fruits of your work. Offer some assistance to further the cause of devotional life. Have a nice festival and sponsor prasadam for all the devotees that come to the festival. Or something like that. Use your wealth for service to Krishna. Or give your wife. I did that one. And I'm very happy I did. Just last night at Northeastern University, two students came up afterwards and said, you've been doing this for 40 years? What's the secret? How do you do something for 40 years? And you're just sacrifice and sacrifice. And sacrifice is nice, but 40 years? what keeps you going? What's the fuel in your tank? I want to go get a fill-up. And it's very simply, what I said is same as this verse. It's I find happiness in serving others. And especially when it means serving others is on the platform of the soul, helping people discover their spiritual identity and find happiness on the platform of the soul. That's it's fun. And it's of service to the predecessor spiritual masters. That's their mission too. And the process is very simple and it's very joyful. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And take this knowledge and apply it in practical ways in life. That's where separates the men from the boys, where you hear something and then you do it. It's like children. You're trying to train children something and they say, yes, mommy, yes, daddy, and you leave them alone and they're doing something else. Right? Children. And then for us, there are spiritual values and spiritual principles that we can say yes, and then how do we practically apply them in our own lives? So giving some, by practical example and by guidance and by gently helping others grow in their spiritual lives. That's very nice. A life dedicated to that is a very happy life. But it starts with receiving. It starts with living the message, being a walking example of what Srimad Bhagavatam teaches and Bhagavad Gita teaches and the message of devotion teaches. So what I was going to do, I don't know if there's time for. I'll very quickly do this other one and we'll close because Aarti's going to be in 15 to 12 minutes or so. When you take up in a serious way some type of not just, you know, the Hare Krishna thing, but some type of spiritual practice, something happens. Cleansing of the heart happens. The desire to serve others, or compassion. It's just a natural quality of some spiritual progress. So here's a little news bulletin. Be careful how you apply that tendency of compassion, because it can be misapplied with good intention and neither help you nor the other person. So I gave some examples of this at MIT when it was there on Monday, but I'll skip some of those examples and just give one that's also from Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's the life of Bharat Maharaj. Those of you that are from India, you immediately know who is Bharat Maharaj. Is that child from India also? Not from India. From the spiritual world. Okay, so if I had more time, I would elaborate, and I don't, so I'm not. But Bharat Maharaj is such a prominent king that the whole planet was named after him. Like, I don't know what Logan Airport was before it was Logan Airport, but it was probably some name. And then somebody named it Logan Airport, like in New York. It was Idlewild Airport, and then John F. Kennedy became president. And after he was president, they renamed it John F. Kennedy Airport. Or Mary LaGuardia Airport, or, you know, Martin Luther King Boulevard, or, you know, places or streets or buildings or, you know, after a great person. How great was Bharat Maharaj? The whole planet was named after him. He was up there. And his... more details, but his whole life, he ruled for a very long time in a previous yuga where lifespan was much greater, long time, and he ruled, and the citizens loved him because he was such a pure person, a qualified person, and he was on the path of achieving spiritual perfection. When his sons were mature, he turned the kingdom over to his sons. He left to live in the forest, went to a very special place called Pulaha Ashram, named after Pulaha Muni. And there's two very specials about this place. It said in this place, those that worship the Supreme Lord, he personally comes before them and shows his spiritual form. So he chose that place. And the second is, it's by the riverbank of the Gandaki River. And again, those of you from India, you know the Gandaki River. It's a place where Shalagram Shilas are found in the riverbed, just naturally. So it's like drinking and bathing in Abhishek water from bathing of the deities every day. That's where he lived. And built a little cottage by the side of the Gandaki River in Pulaha Ashram. And he became so spiritually elevated that he wasn't just practicing anymore. He was in the stage of spontaneous, ecstatic love. It's called bhava bhakti. Just naturally, his whole body would tremble, tears would stream from his eyes, his hairs were standing on end. He was in ecstatic expressions of devotion to the Supreme. The Lord would appear within his mind and have exchanges with him. He was up there. Then, one day, early in the morning, just as the sun was rising, he had performed his morning bath and his doing his morning devotional practice, sitting by the edge of the river, chanting his mantra, and on the opposite side of the river there was a pregnant deer drinking water. So we know the motion of the deer. They look around and see, is there any danger coming, and drank some more and looked around, and all of a sudden a loud lion's roar, probably louder than that. And she panicked, and in that state of panic she had a miscarriage. Our Acharya's comment that a woman who's pregnant should be very careful not to be in a traumatic or very stressful, extremely frightening situation, because that may happen. Miscarriage. The deer had a miscarriage. And the baby deer, the fawn, fell into the water. And as that was happening, simultaneously she leaped into the air. But it was the river that was in front of her, not land, and so she landed in the water, that got carried downstream by the water and swam to the edge and crawled into a cave and died. So here's this king of the whole world seeing this very unfortunate event taking place. So he really immediately went into the river to rescue the fawn, and brought the fawn back to his side of the river, and brought the fawn to his cottage. And became the mother and father and friend and caretaker, and took care of the deer. And it's good. He's the king. He's taking care of his citizens, a helpless little creature. But he went too far. He went so far that he not just took care of the deer, but he completely neglected all of his spiritual practice, and eventually completely forgot what his mission of life was. He forgot God and this whole program. Completely forgot. And then he had this whole rationale why he knew what he was doing. It's okay because... And he gave us all those various reasons why it's okay. It's not good that I stop my spiritual practice, but it wouldn't be right if I let the deer alone, because the deer's helpless and I'm the king, so I got to take care of the deer, and so here we go. He took care, you've heard this example perhaps, the man is drowning and an expert swimmer swims out and grabs the coat of the expert, of the drowning man, and brings the coat back to shore. Great. And the man drowns. Something's wrong with that. You have to rescue the man, not just the coat of the man. So the covering of the body needs some attention. But what's inside the body, the soul that's within, that's the animating self within the body, that's what needs to be rescued. A spiritually elevated person such as Barbara should have known that. And in fact, he did know that, and he neglected that. Consciously, he neglected that. So there's many, many pages of his internal dialogue of talking to the deer and kissing the deer, and the deer would go off wandering and he'd blame himself, "Oh, I've offended the deer. Oh dear. I've been bad, I haven't been kind enough to the deer, and so they're teaching me a lesson, they're abandoning me. But please come back, you're very compassionate, you're elevated like a saintly bird." He was he was goo goo gaga. He was really gone into this deer. And then a very unfortunate event happened. The deer was not to be seen for a whole day. He was feeling separation from the deer. So he went looking for the deer, and he fell off a cliff. And he fell to the bottom of the jagged rocks, thinking of the deer. And according to what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, is what happened. What Krishna says is, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajadante kalevaram, which means, whatever the mind is fixed on at the time of death, that state you will attain. So guess what happened? He became a deer. That person who the whole planet was named after became a deer. And he was embarrassed. He was also given recollection of who he was in his previous life, this king that was like on his way to spiritual perfection. But because he neglected that, he became a deer. And so he lived that life out as a deer. And his next life, he was also awarded some very special benediction. He became the son of a brahmana. And he didn't make the same mistake twice. He was very careful to not fall prey to forgetting the real purpose of life. There's more to the story, but time doesn't stop. It's still moving. So the point that I wanted to make here is compassion is something that's innate. It's actually within the soul. Krishna is compassionate, and the parts and parcels of Krishna have the same quality. They're compassionate. But as our compassionate nature awakens through spiritual practice, be very careful where you apply that tendency for compassion. And the recommendation is apply on the platform of the soul. Help other souls come to the spiritual position. In so doing, you may give help to the body, help to the mind, and so forth. But attend to the needs of the soul. So we'll do that by having RT for Radha Gopi Bhallava. Shri Shri Radha Gopi Bhallava ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandini Gopi Bhallava.